97.9 FM, WCHL, and the UNC College of Journalism and Mass Communication presents Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examinations of issues of overarching importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions to problems in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the UNC campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, concussions in football. Joining us are Dr. Jason Mihalik, an assistant professor in the Department of Exercise and Sports Science at UNC Chapel Hill. His research is studying the biomechanics related to head trauma and ways to manage head trauma. And Jamal Brooks, who was a linebacker and special teams player in the NFL for 7 seasons, playing for the Dallas Cowboys, the Cleveland Browns, and the St. Louis Rams. Gentlemen, next week a new book comes out titled League of Denial, The NFL, Concussions, and the Battle of Truth. A Sports Illustrated excerpt calls the book the NFL doesn't want us to read. Jason, why would that be? Why would the NFL not want us to read this book?
Well, I haven't seen the book or read the book. From what I know about the book, my guess is that there's some information in there related to some research that was initiated by the NFL and its concussion committee back in the late 90s, early 2000s, that might have generated some information to suggest that the NFL knew some of the issues related to head trauma in their sport. My guess is with this book that there's some information in there related to some of that information that had not been published previously.
And Jamal, not only this new book, but also a series by PBS Frontline called The Concussion Crisis, lots and lots of media interest, media attention to this topic. Is it a crisis, concussion crisis?
It matters if you're taking a viewpoint of, I guess, a parent, then yes, it probably would be a crisis. But if you're taking a viewpoint as an athlete, when you're out there, and I'm pretty sure I've had many concussions and I didn't even recognize it. Every concussion is not where, you know, someone's laying on the ground eating smelling salt. Some concussions are just getting hit and being dizzy, but you keep playing and then you play the next play. I think maybe so if the information comes out that they knew things were more serious than we all had suspected, then yeah, that might be the crisis. It might be more of an information crisis than an actual concussion crisis.
And Jason, some have commented that, concussions are an occupational hazard, especially a pro football, and the players knew what they were getting into. How much of the responsibility is on the shoulder of the player?
I think there are a lot of players, and we've seen this on popular media, ESPN, Sports Illustrated, that have actually openly said they're not going to change the way they play, even though we know the style that they play with headhunting and so forth is actually injurious to their colleagues on the field. So they know that certain things will result in injury, certain actions and behaviors will result in injury on the field, and it's the players themselves that are many times saying they're not going to change the way they play the game.
Jamal, even with this focus on head trauma and helmet-helmet contact and what have you, just watching the game on TV, it seems as violent as it has ever been.
Yes, the people have to understand, as an athlete, you've been taught to play the game, but you're not taught to be the doctor to tell you what you need to do after you have a concussion. So, for instance, there's more concussions, I would say, you know, per event would be boxing. But if a boxer gets knocked out by within the next 30 minutes, they're not back in the ring fighting. You understand what I'm saying? I understand we're taught to be gladiators and we're taught to go hit people. But once we get a concussion, that's out of our realm of understanding all the information that can now happen to you if you then turn around and not only play the next quarter, but you have to go to practice for the next 4 days and hit some more. So that's where we don't have the information to make a sound decision. We're still going to hit each other, and we're still going to go out there and strip the ball, and somebody's coming across the middle. You're going to try to hit them as hard as you possibly can. But what happens after that, I think, has to be taken out of our hands because we're not educated on that particular topic.
And Jamal, from Little League on through college and then into the pros, you're estimating you played about 17 years of tackle football. How many times do you think you had concussions?
I would say a concussion where I blacked out once. I know that, and that was so curious about that. That was in high school, and we wasn't even in. We weren't even in uniform. It was just a passing league, and I ran into a kid, and I was knocked out. But then what's so funny, I went back in the game later on and kept playing. But in the pros, I probably had dizzy, was probably a little dizzy, where my legs were a little wobbly, where if it was a boxing match, they would have given me a standing eight count. That's probably about three times. But where I'm knocked out and cold, that was only once in my career.
And Jason, what is a concussion for our listeners who are not in the medical field? Is it a bruise to the brain, or is it more involved than that?
It's actually not a bruise to the brain. A concussion occurs, if you want to visualize passengers in a moving vehicle. So the vehicle is the skull, which is wrapped around with airbags, the helmet, so to speak, and the brain is the passenger inside that vehicle. And what happens is the player is running down the field and gets hit, usually to the head, and causes the head, the car, to come to a sudden stop very, very quickly. And the passenger inside the vehicle, just like would happen in a motor vehicle accident, continues to move forward because they have not slowed down yet. And that's what happens to the brain inside the skull. So the brain inside the skull essentially kind of rams forward, it strikes the front of the skull, it bounces back, it strikes the back of the skull. So there's no severe trauma to the brain in the sense that we would see a skull fracture or we would see bleeding or bruises. What we see instead are functional deficits. And so we'll see things like, symptoms like headache, or they're dizzy, or they have a hard time remembering things, or they have a hard time concentrating. So we see a more of a functional kind of constellation of injuries that more times than not aren't identified through CT and MRIs in an emergency room.
And Jamal, despite what might have been years of covering up the truth, just a couple of months ago, the NFL did settle with a group of former players. $765 million, so no small change there, recognizing that former players have suffered as a result of playing in the league. Is that a good sign?
I guess it's a good sign because it's better than nothing. But in regards to what the ramifications are, I can't connect the Junior Seau situation with a concussion, but there's been many speculations that might have been a situation. If it has been a situation where lives were lost, then the family would say that's not enough because there's nothing that you can do to bring back a life. But I believe more important than the money is just information being accessible for all, for Pop Warner, high school to college, and the pros, for parents and players and the doctors to make the right decision in regards to how do we move forward from this.
We're talking with Jason Mihalik and Jamal Brooks about head trauma in football on Sports Focus. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. Our guests are Jason Mihalik and Jamal Brooks. We're discussing head trauma in football. Jamal, before the break, you mentioned Junior Seau, and he is perhaps the most high-profile death that some have attributed to head trauma. Does it make you worry about your own future, the premature deaths, suicides, et cetera, that we've been seeing?
No. I'm very close, not to bring religion into it, but I'm very close, with God, and my family has prayed about that situation, especially after all of these things that have happened with former players. As of right now, I'm trying to do better at taking care of my health, in general. So hopefully I can recognize some things, either it's depression or eyesight or something to that, of that manner. So every year I try to take a physical, and if I have any issues, I discuss it with my family, and then I go to my doctor so I can kind of, be more preventative instead of reactive to once something happens to me.
And Jason, you helped develop an app that helps athletes, coaches, and parents determine if a player has been concussed and needs to seek immediate medical attention. This is a situation that arises well before someone makes it to the NFL, correct?
Absolutely.
How does this app work, and how will it help parents whose sons and sometimes daughters are playing football?
Right. So the app isn't designed for football. It's designed for youth sport, essentially. But the thing with concussion is that the symptoms that we are asking athletes about aren't unique to concussion. So things like headache and dizziness could be a sign of heat illness or dehydration on the field. So the symptoms that we ask as clinicians about concussion are not specific to concussion. So one of the key things is that there needs to be a mechanism of injury that also occurs, a direct impact to the head, an indirect hit to the, to the torso that causes the head to kind of move in this whiplash type of mechanism. So the app walks the parent and the coach through those things, those questions. Did they get hit? If so, where? How hard did it appear? Do they have signs of an injury? Signs are things that you as the observer would see. And then it goes through a list of essentially red flags, things that would warrant immediate referral to the emergency room. And if any of those exist, there's a button right there on the phone that dials out to 911 for the parent or for the coach. If there are no red flags, it goes on to symptoms, which is usually the part where you take the athlete off the field and you ask them how they're feeling. And it guides them through all of these signs and symptoms that are really critical for the clinician who will ultimately care for this athlete. And it's kind of the game of telephone where, if the parent's not there and the coach doesn't have this information available to them, they tell the child to tell their parents, don't forget to tell your mom that you had a headache and you felt dizzy. And of course the kid, who inherently has memory problems as a result of this injury, doesn't remember that information. Or it gets shared from the coach to the parent over the phone, and then the parent takes the kid to the physician the next day or two or 3 days later and doesn't share that exact information. So the app has the ability to also save that information with the with the click of a button or the tap of the screen. It generates an email report that has everything that occurred at the time of injury. So the parent can now take that information that they receive from the coach, don't have to play the game of telephone, and bring that report to the physician and say, this is how Johnny felt at the time of the injury. And that is extremely informative to a clinician to understand what happened at the time of the injury, how the athlete is at that point in time when they're evaluating them, and it'll help them chart some good recommendations as far as returning them to school, returning them to activity, and hopefully returning them to sport.
And Jamal, parents, medical personnel, they have to have the information to be able to act on the information. And some have said the NFL stands for not for long. You're not going to be there very long. And if you get injured frequently, you might get cut. And even in little boys football, you're taught, as you said, to be a warrior. How frequent do you think it is that players hide injuries and don't want to say anything about it?
Oh, well, the NFL is almost 100% injury league, especially if you play, more than 2 years. And if you play football, you've been injured sometime. I think probably every game there's someone hiding an injury. Maybe the ankle's a little worse than, they put on, because that's a position. And if they'll get cut. It happens all the time. That's just the nature. But if you think about it, I don't know if it's so much the NFL. That's every sport. When it's something with competition, whether you're in business or whether you're in sports, you want to hide something that can make someone have a more negative view about you. So I think that's just human nature. And if you can go, they've always said there's a difference between being injured and being hurt. A lot of times you may think you're hurt, but you're actually injured. But if you can still run on it, it's fine. If it's sticking out and it's bleeding, but you can run on it, it's fine. So just wrap it up, tape it up, and let's go.
And Jason, is part of the problem that players for years just have not understood the importance, the potential severity of a brain injury?
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that you use the term brain injury, because that's exactly what it is. For for many years they've been referred to as, you know, dings or bell ringers, and these terms that really dismiss the injury. You know, a very classic example that I use when I give presentations on this topic is I was covering a hockey event, and one of the opposing team's players was injured. And the official skated over to our bench and just kind of stood by our bench to make sure, you know, we weren't getting in the way. And I walked over and said, I'm a certified athletic trainer. Can you please go out there and let the coach know that I'm happy to offer assistance if it's a serious injury? And the official turned around and looked at me and said, oh, no, it's just fine. You know, he got his bell rung. And he dismissed it. And I looked at him and I said, you realize that's a brain injury? And the second I said that, his attitude changed and said, well, why don't you come on the ice right now then? And it was just that subtle change in nomenclature. The injury was no different from when he called it a bell ringer to when I called it a brain injury from a physiology standpoint, but it changed the way that he behaved around that. I think one of the issues with the brain is you can't see it, right? And you, as a clinician, as a coach, you don't understand it because Johnny looks fine, but he isn't. And you can't grasp that with the ankle injury or the bone sticking out. That's obvious, right? You see it. The foot's not where it's supposed to be. It's an obvious injury. Johnny's not going back. I get that as a coach. But when you see someone with a concussion, they look like the person next to them, unless, of course, they've lost consciousness, and that's a more serious situation. But it's a very hard injury to see and to understand, and I think that's why people have a hard time kind of recognizing it, even in themselves. And let alone going to a physician or the sideline athletic trainer to report the injury.
Jamal, during your playing years, do you think that you had an appreciation of the seriousness of injuries to the brain?
No. To be honest with you, in the culture of football, if someone gets knocked out or you can tell they're dizzy, it's almost like a joke. You come back to the sideline and you're like, whew, he hit me pretty hard, I'm dizzy. So it's not taken serious in any aspect of it. Even if someone gets, well, if they get knocked out and they have to get carted off the field, obviously that's more serious. But if they get knocked out, they give them a smell of salt and they come back, you know, to the bench, they might laugh about it. So they don't understand that whether it's now or whether it's years later that injury still might, you know, affect you. So I don't think we took it serious because your knees were probably taken more serious than your brain. And that's just the culture and that's just the environment that you're in for the NFL particularly.
We're talking about head trauma and football on Sports Focus. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. Our topic this week, concussions in football. We're chatting with Jason Mihalik and Jamal Brooks. Gentlemen, I'm a high school football official. And there has been a definite increase in the focus from our leagues on protecting players, on helmet safety, on watching for helmet-to-helmet contact, et cetera. Jason, I assume that you would think that's a step in the right direction.
I think it's absolutely a step in the right direction. There's a lot of hype that football is a dangerous sport. Football is a competitive sport. It's a collision sport. So is ice hockey, so is lacrosse, so is rugby. These are all activities that will result in injury, and sometimes they will result in concussion. The important thing here is that the concussion itself is not a deadly disease, but it's the mismanagement of concussion that could result in some of these long-term issues, we believe, anyway, that we're seeing in, you know, these NFL players. So managing the injury, identifying the injury is key, and there are many benefits to playing in those sports.
And Jamal, you know, you can imagine if you put a helmet on and ran headfirst into a brick wall, that's going to hurt. But that's essentially what happens in the NFL and at leagues lower than that. So you do have to assume a certain amount of risk, yes?
Yeah, but to be honest with you, I personally believe over time, the new rule changes in trying to prevent head-on-head injuries, I think it's actually going to cause more serious injuries. And let me explain. When you're hitting someone and it's a natural position, and whether you know, you can't really judge if you're going to hit their helmet or not. It's impossible. There's two moving targets that are not stationary. But when you go out of your way and try to turn your neck a certain way that's unorthodox or turn this way unorthodox, there's going to be situations where you've created more damage, spinal damage, instead of just hitting the kid. Because if you're so focused on trying to, you know, besides missing tackles, if you're so focused on trying to turn your neck and move your head out the way, then when you do get hit, it's unnatural for that position in your neck, and there may be some more serious damages that people aren't thinking about. Because to be honest with you, if I had a son, even though the coach told him, you need to do this and put your shoulder into it, move your neck out the way, at home I'm going to say, this is how you hit. If you get kicked out of the game or whatever, I need you to protect yourself. And you turning your head or turning your neck a certain way, I don't feel comfortable with that.
And Jason, one of the terms that's come up is targeting. If a player ducks the head and uses the helmet as a weapon, well, that's fairly obvious. But there is no way, as Jamal pointed out, to avoid helmet contact in football.
No, there isn't, and it's going to happen. It's like he said, there's two moving targets, and these things will happen in a fast-paced game. The key, though, is that tackling an opponent is intended to stop forward progress of the ball, not to separate head from opponent. And there's a clear distinction there between, I think, what the league is trying to do and what the younger leagues are trying to instill in the players, is that there is a way to tackle an opponent, to wrap him up, and to stop that forward progress, short of ducking your own head, which is dangerous to you as the hammer, let alone to the opponent who's the nail.
We've been discussing head trauma in football. That does it for this edition of Sports Focus. My thanks to our guests, Jamal Brooks and Jason Mihalik. Thanks also to producer Justin Blankenship and to engineer Gary Kirk. Thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall of the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance, and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a production of UNC's College of Journalism and Mass Communication.